Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Vayakel Pekudei. This week, Rabbi David Levenkreuz discusses Vayakel Pekudei. Rabbi David Levenkreuz is a member of the Pardes faculty and also serves as the Pardes Director of Special Programs. And now, Rabbi David Levenkreuz.
Thank you, Larry, and Shabbat Shalom to you all, whatever day of the week you happen to be listening to this podcast. I speak to you from an Israel in the midst of coalition talks, trying to form a government, and one of the parties involved is Yesh Atid, which certainly has some unusual leadership types in it. The head of the party, Yair Lapid, for example, has written a book on characters in the Bible, which I'm actually reading at the moment. And although the Bible and a prime minister who knows the Bible was once part of Israeli culture, it's not a type that has been seen for a long time. And at the same time, we have in his party Ruth Calderon, who is a secular woman. Both of these people are secular, who is a Talmudist. And some of you may have seen the YouTube video, which has actually gone viral, in which she teaches a sugya in the Knesset. By the way, it's very, very well worth looking at and listening to, and it is available with English subtitles. So we have a party in the Knesset with two people, one who's written a book on the Bible, one who is a Talmudist, and perhaps it's very appropriate that today I'm talking about Bezalel, about leadership, and about the difference between the Torah and the Talmud when it comes to looking at Bezalel. And it's very, very interesting in Parashat Vayakel Pekudei, and it's a double parasha this week, and in fact what I have to say spans the two parashiot, and also there's a little bit of Kitisa. Kitisa, you'll remember, the parasha we just read, we had the story of the golden calf. And to my mind, there was a need suddenly to have a new leader, a new kind of teacher, somebody who is completely untainted by the sin of the calf. Even Moshe and Yeshua, in their own way, were tainted or involved, and suddenly there's a need for a new leader, somebody completely different. Again, and I'm not going to belabor the, pardon the pun, but I'm not going to belabor the political point too much, a little bit like Yesh Atid is viewed by many people as being a new brand of leadership, a new kind, fresh faces in the Knesset. By the way, this is not a push for Yesh Atid or any other party. I'm merely using the phenomenon of a new party with a new kind of a leader as a way for us to understand what might have been happening at the time of the golden calf, where suddenly we have this new man, Bezalel, the chief architect of the tabernacle. His name, Bezalel, means in the shadow or the protection of God. He is a highly gifted workman. He can engrave precious metals and stone. He's a wood carver. He's able to teach, and he has apprentices under him who instructs in the arts. He is the one who is asked to construct the Ohel Moed, the tent of meeting and its furniture, to prepare the priestly garments, the oil, the incense, and he's also in charge of these. If we look at how Bezalel is looked at in the Torah, we see in Shmot 31, which is actually the parasha we just read last week, God says to Moshe, Re'e, karati b'shem Bezalel ben Uri ben Hur, lemate Yehudan, ve'emale oto ruach Elohim, b'chokhma u'betvuna u'bedat, u'bechol melacha, I've singled out Bezalel, I've endowed him with a divine spirit of skill, ability and knowledge in every kind of craft. And when Moshe, in this week's parasha, says this back to Am Yisrael, it's word for word, almost word for word, I should say, what God has said to Moses. He says exactly what God has said. There's very, very little change. There is a vav, which is absent in the second passage. In the first passage, God says, Ruach Elohim bechokhma ubetvuna, the Spirit of God in wisdom and in understanding. And when Moshe repeats it, it says, the Spirit of God in wisdom, understanding, perhaps implying a greater level of Ruach HaKodesh, that there's more, that whereas God only said, that he has Ruach Elohim, that he has godly spirit when it comes to knowledge. Moses says he has godly spirit when it comes to knowledge and understanding. On the face of it, a small change. If it wasn't the Bible, we probably wouldn't even notice such a difference. If it wasn't for the fact that one of the ways we study the Bible is by looking for extremely fine differentiations for the rabbis who believed, as many of us do today still, that the Torah is the word of God. For the rabbis, even the slightest change, the slightest hint had meaning. But honestly, if I was reading it as a regular book, I would hardly notice it. I would think that the author just didn't think about it. And we're going to see that the Talmud is really going to pick up and speak about the Ruach Elohim of Bezalel, how Bezalel really has the Spirit of God within him, and what this means, and how it's much broader than one might seem. And then in Shmot 38, the third source that you have in front of you, we read, U'Bezalel ben Uri ben Hur lemate Yehuda, asa et kol asher tziva Adonai el Moshe, that he did everything that God commanded Moses. So if we look at the Torah, we have the story of a man who was chosen by God, perhaps almost randomly. God tells that to Moshe. Moses then goes and tells it to Am Yisrael, and almost word for word, and we hear about Bezalel as somebody who does exactly what God says. So it's very God-centered, very much based around obedience. When we look at the Talmud, we see something very, very different. What we're going to do together today is we're going to learn a little piece of Talmud together. We're going to pick up on its salient points, and we're going to understand how the rabbis created a Bezalel very different from the Torah and what their reasons were for doing that. We read, there are three things, this is in Brachot 55a on your source sheets. There are three things that God himself proclaims. Shlosha dvarim machriz alehem HaKadosh Baruch Hu be'atzmo. In other words, these are from God's direct intervention. And what are they? Ra'av, v'sova, u'parnas, tov. Famine, plenty, and a good leader. These are things that affect people very, very directly. And we say that God is the one who chooses a leader. Some of us might know the Latin saying, vox populi, vox Dei, the voice of the masses, the voice of the people is the voice of God. Here it's almost vox Dei, vox populi, the voice of God is the voice of the people. God is the one who chooses it, and they use our pasuk to prove it. But then we go on, and it says, Amar Rav Yitzhak says, Ein ma'midim parnas ala tzibur, eli miken nimlachim betzibur. You should not appoint a leader for a community without the community themselves crowning this leader or being consulted, as the translation that I gave you said. And then goes on to tell a story that that the Kadosh Baruch Hu, that God says to Moshe, Moshe hagun alecha Bezalel, is Bezalel an appropriate teacher? And Moshe replies, as one would if one was speaking to the leader of the ruler of the universe, Ribono shel Olam, God, im lefanecha hagun lefanai kol sheken, if you think he's a good leader, don't I think so all the more so? I mean, here I have godly proof. Af al pichen, God says, even so, lech emor laem, go and ask Israel. And Moses goes and asks Israel, and they give the same answer. They say, if you think he's good, and God thinks he's good, then we certainly seem to think he's good. This is very different from what's written in the Torah. Here we have the Am Yisrael being asked, and there is even a linguistic way that re'u is connected to words that might mean consult. And the people are consulted, but they take God and Moshe very seriously. And this is very, very much Pesach is coming in. Pesach is in the air. One of the things that free people do is that we do choose our own leaders. And we see here that even if an appointee is fully qualified and elected by the greatest sage of the generation, the community's consent must be obtained. Part of leadership is that you are accepted by the people, some type of a hint of democracy. And in fact, in all the debates that we've recently been having, is democracy a Jewish value and is it a mitzvah to vote, which happens in certain sectors of the Jewish religious community. Bezalel is in fact a story that people look at and say, hey, wait a minute, even though God had chosen Bezalel, nevertheless, the people were consulted. I have to say I have a few maybe niggling questions about this. First of all, do the people really have a choice? If you're told that God has approved and Moshe has approved, I wonder how much choice there really is. And perhaps the people did not live up to the challenge. Perhaps God wanted them to disagree. If we look later on in the Jewish history, when the importance of agreeing, of disagreement, I wonder if really perhaps they should have said, well, you know, let's think about it a little bit. So it's unclear to me how much real choice there is. Some of people might know the Midrash about God raising Mount Sinai above the Jewish people, kegigit, like a tub, that and like that when the Am Yisrael accepted the Torah, they didn't really have that much of a choice. And what this passage seems to be saying to me is that God choosing is not the way to elect leaders. We are not looking for leaders who have been appointed by God. We're living in a new world, and what we want, this is already in the Torah, but the rabbi's looking at the Torah. We need people who are accepted by the Am, some type of an early democracy. We then, so the first plank of leadership is democracy. We then go on and read something else about Bezalel. Very, very interesting. Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani said Bezalel was so called on account of his wisdom. And how do we know he was wise? When HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe, Lech emor lo Bezalel, go and tell Bezalel, Aseli mishkan aron vekelim, make me a mishkan, a tabernacle, a movable sanctuary, an aron, an ark, similar to the ark we have in Shul today, which is one of the things that is inside the mishkan, and kelim, and the vessels. He says, go and tell Bezalel to make a tabernacle, ark, and vessels. And in many, many ways, this order is logical. If you're building something, you need something to put the objects in. It makes sense that you would make a mishkan first. And once you've made the scaffold, not the scaffolding, the tent, you will have, make the ark and vessels to be put into it. Otherwise, you're going to be carrying them around. It's also, it's also fits in with the theories of education, the Montessori school, as far as I know, and the famous book by Covey. There's a lot of an idea of seeing the big picture first, that if people have an idea of what the big picture is, what the aim is, what the end product is, that'll help them to become more committed to what they are doing. I think some of us might have known the story that somebody went to three bricklayers and said to them, what are you doing? And the first one said, I'm building a wall. The second one said, I'm building a building. And the third one said, I'm creating a cathedral. And in fact, I was reading something by Heinrich Heine last night, the famous German Jewish writer and poet, who was actually speaking about how people who built these grand cathedrals in Europe, how much conviction they must have had, because they knew they would never see it. It's not like today where we're going to see the outcome of our buildings. They knew that they were going to see it, but they had would never see it in their lives. But they had this conviction that they would have this big building that they would one day see. So there's a lot of logic in what God says to Bezalel. God says to Moshe, Halach Moshe v'hafach. But Moses goes and changes the order. V'amar lo, Aseh Aron v'kelim u'mishkan. He says it in the opposite direction. And Bezalel is very clever. Rabbeinu, he says, showing respect, humility. Minago shel olam, the way of the world is, boneh, adam boneh bait. First the person builds a house. V'achar kach machnis lechoto kelim. And afterwards you put the kelim, and you give it to me in the other direction. Very, very respectfully, he says, Shema kach amar lecha kakadosh baruch hu. Perhaps God said to you, Asem mishkan aron v'kelim, make a mishkan and aron and kelim. Maybe he says it with great humility. Just could it possibly be, not looking to be combative, could it possibly be that God said something else? And Moshe says, Amar lo shema betzal el hayita v'yadad. He said, you live up to your name. You really are in God's providence, in God's shadow. You're a bright man. So one thing I think we need to say, besides Bezalel's humility, is that Moshe is able to accept the criticism. Not only is he able to accept the criticism, but he's actually happy and gets nachas, gets pride for the way that Bezalel catches about. So what is happening over here? Perhaps Moshe made a mistake. He's intimidated by God and doesn't realize that the order is important. That could very well be. Perhaps, as teachers love to say when they're caught out with a mistake, perhaps Moshe did this to test Bezalel. People will be able to see that Bezalel has Ruach HaKodesh, hinting back to that extra vav that I spoke about. He creates an opening for Bezalel to show his creativity and to prove to people how great he is. So perhaps Moshe did it on purpose, that Moshe would be able to show his brilliance. I think it's in the Chosen by Chaim Potok that the Rebbe always makes a mistake in his drasha in order that his son is able to pick it up. Or a third reason why Moshe might have changed the order is that Moshe wants to say to Bezalel that what's inside in the Mishkan is what is important. Yes, the Ohel Moed is very important. It's where God's Shechina is. But in the end, it's a housing for its contents. And the Aron is the blueprint for the world. Whatever the reason might be, Moshe changes the order and enables Bezalel to show his creativity. And thus we see Bezalel as a keen listener, logical, brave, respectful, linked to God, and also creative, able to not just listen to what is said to him, but to see a different and a better way to do it. What's interesting, of course, is this creativity is different from what many of us today see of as creativity. Over here, all creativity is coming from God. And what I do with my creative instinct is I get back to what God wants. If people have read Tamar Ross's excellent book, Expanding the Palace of Torah, she speaks about this idea, this Platonic idea, that God, you know, created everything and all creativity. Our job is to tap into it and to make use of it. And as I said, very different from very modern conceptions, where the ultimate is to be new, the ultimate is to be different, and certainly in some versions of modernity and post-modernity, the ultimate is to undo what has been done before, to reframe it, to find out that what we did was before was bad, and what we're doing now is better, or to show what was before was no good. This is a very, very powerful part of modern creativity, of undermining what came before us. This is very different from what we see over here, where creativity is not, hey, wait a minute, I'm better or I'm cleverer, but getting back to what God wants. A friend of mine who is an academic, not from an observant background, once told the story that he studied with the great Bible scholar Nechama Leibovich. And he said something, and with a big smile on her face, she said, "That's wonderful, Paul." She said, "That's what Rashi says." And he says for him, it was this great liberating moment. as an academic, the biggest thing that you're frightened of is that somebody's going to come up with exactly the same theory that you've come up with. Whereas here he was being told it's good for you to be, it's good for you to come back with somebody else's said. So a very, very different form of creativity. Creativity is getting to what God wanted anyway. But then we hear about Rav Yehuda. He says, Amar Rav. Rav Yehuda says in the name of Rav, Yodea haya betzalel etzaref otiyot shenevru'u behen shamayim va'aretz. That Bezalel had a special ability to combine the letters by which heaven and earth were created. God created the world, according to the rabbis, by joining the letters of the Hebrew alphabet in various combinations. In the Kabbalah, the Jewish mystical tradition, there's great power to the letters of the Hebrew language. And this is what Bezalel does too. The heaven is the world of God. Earth is domain of the people. What Bezalel did is made God's earthly residence. He took the aspects of heaven and of earth. He takes the godly and the earthly, and he combines things. And that is what to create is. To create is to take different things. That's where create is different to make. Make is taking what is and maybe changing it. Create is taking and making something new. Bezalel does both of these. He takes what he has, but he makes something new. It's fascinating that it then goes on to prove this idea of Bezalel. Then goes on and quotes it by quoting Mishle. And we then go on and say in the next paragraph, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu noten chokhma, ele lemi sheyesh bo chokhma. God only gives wisdom to one who already has wisdom. And again, this is very, very different. In the Torah, it seems as if the choice of Bezalel is random. Whereas here in the Gemara, it seems that he already is a wise person. And it's interesting, they first quoted from Daniel, but then they quoted from Shmot, seem to be saying that it's better to quote from the Torah than from the prophets. The Torah has greater value than the prophets. But I think it also highlights that Bezalel has got insights without the Torah or the prophets. It's a new type of insight. It's an insight that comes from the person themselves. Bezalel is Bezalel. He's in the shadow of God. He's protected by God. And I think it's also very interesting, though, nevertheless, and of course to be in God's shadow would be great, it's still God's shadow. It's not actually God. The Torah and the prophets are from God. The Torah is even more from God than the prophets. But now we have a new way of looking at the world, a world in which I use my own insight, my own creativity, but it's still very much in the shadow of God. It's God, but not quite as strong. And so if we were to summarize what we've said, in the Torah, Bezalel is appointed by God. In the Talmud, the people are asked. In the Torah, it's random. In the Talmud, God deserves it. In the Torah, Bezalel does what he is told. In the Talmud, he is involved. In some way, what the rabbis have created is an anti-Moses. He's chosen by the people. He's intuitive. He's artistic. He uses physicality for spiritual purposes. He has different types of intelligence. And it's not too much of a jump to see that the rabbis saw themselves as being Bezalels. They don't have direct revelation, but sometimes they're able to get straighter and better to the truth than the one who's gotten direct revelation. And in fact, there are statements by the rabbis in which they say that the sage is greater than the prophet, that what I'm able to see and learn with my own logic and my own intuition is greater than what I can do when I am, is greater than what I can do through revelation, because with revelation I'm dependent on God, if I use my own intuition, it's always there. We've seen many, many wonderful things today. We've seen democracy, the importance of disagreement, the ability to accept criticism, respect for authority, for humility, the value of creativity. I started off by speaking about creating a coalition. Would it be, and how wonderful would it be, if the leaders of Israel could show these wonderful qualities that I've just mentioned, and that we could have not only leaders who are Jews, but Jewish leaders. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Levin Cruz. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.